Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we are going to talk about movies that make you cry and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And, it is a Monday morning, which also means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Every Monday morning, Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me to review the new movies. We've got a bunch of new movies to talk about, and then Eric and I are going to talk about the box office results for this past weekend as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And, let's get the guys in here and get the movie reviews going. Here is, Eric Childress. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
And, Colin Suter. Colin, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Some interesting stuff at the box office here, Eric. We'll talk about this later, but man, I was stunned by the numbers that Venom did.
Me too.
I mean, my God.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And there's a bit to talk about with those numbers that thing going forward is going to be kind of interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to do that. And but let's get into some movies right now. Eric, tell us about All About Nina.
Okay, this film stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead as a stand-up comedian who is, she's single, she keeps men generally at an arm's length as far as serious relationships are concerned. This is the movie begins. She's currently in a questionable relationship in a couple different respects. She doesn't want to get too close to anybody, and she uses, as many comedians do, a lot of her life experiences in her stand-up routine, which is frequently sort of dedicated to male and female relationships. But through the course of her time doing stand-up, she ends up meeting a new guy played by Common, who is kind of the exact opposite of all the guys that she has been with, or her perception of guys that she hasn't been with. He's a real gentleman. He seems to really care for her. As characters like this tend to be, that they tend to be very skeptical of jumping into that type of relationship, because they just don't want to get themselves hurt. She's also on the side scenes kind of a spiritual guru and lives with her on occasion. That's an aspect of the film that doesn't quite work as well. But what really does work is Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Her performance in this movie is really the reason to see it. I think we've seen enough movies about stand-up comics, and I think one of the things I think we can all agree on when we see movies about stand-up comics is that usually the material in the movie is generally not particularly good. You can kind of see why they're struggling stand-up comics, because their material isn't that great. But here, even though it might not be all-around laugh-out-loud funny, there's a real connection to this character, and there's a real connection to her experiences that really inform on the comedy. So while there are bits in her work that are laugh-worthy, we really kind of see exactly where she's coming from when she's uttering these words on stage. There's a terrific early scene where she's actually kind of walking through her apartment, kind of massaging the material, trying to figure out exactly the best way to word some of these things. And then Winstead's performance in the movie, she's actually a pretty gifted mimic. She actually does impressions in the film that are actually quite good. And I think that the scenes between her and Common work very well as well. Common is, is a very charming screen presence and has a tendency to believe what he's saying, because he just kind of has a cool, calm demeanor about him. And I think their scenes work together as well. It's not a perfect film by any stretch, but the performance by Winstead is really strong, and I think that what the film is ultimately leading up to is obviously something that is very much on everyone's minds today. And I think it kind of one of those things that kind of informs you, kind of go back throughout the movie and kind of see where this character has been and why she is the way she is. So I think that this is a good film, a little film kind of off the radar, and I hope people find it, because this is really one of her best performances, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm a huge fan of hers, man. I think she's great. I love her in everything. I especially loved her in the last season of Fargo. She was so great.
Oh, terrific.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. But she's great in everything, and since this is sort of, you know, like her star turn, I'm really excited to see it, except that it's only playing in Yorktown and in Hodgkins.
Yeah. We're probably lucky that we even got that much.
It's like, I don't know. And I checked, and it's not on the VOD, because I was going to watch it over the weekend, but it's not on the VOD. So
yeah, anyway. That's unfortunate.
It is. It is. I mean, she's terrific, and I will, you know, once it's available for viewing at home, I will definitely watch it. So that's All About Nina. Not an easy movie to find, but a good one if you are a Mary Elizabeth Winstead fan, and who isn't? That's the question. Colin, tell us about Science Fair.
All right. Well, this is a documentary about what else? A science fair. But this is like the granddaddy of all science fairs. It's the International Science and Engineering Fair. And this draws in about 1,700 of the smartest teenagers from around the world, or 78 different countries, those are the numbers I have here. And they face off. And only one will be named Best in Fair. And the film follows 9 students from around the world who are working on some very intense science projects, such as looking for a way to stop the Zika virus from spreading, the cognitive effects of drugs and alcohol on risk-taking youths. Is another project, and other projects that will undoubtedly be beyond the comprehension of the average viewer who failed at least one science class in middle school. But I digress. And the kids that the movie follows are, you know, from different countries, different backgrounds, and have generally the right attitude when it comes to competing in these circles, meaning, you know, it's not about the prize, it's about the work. And, I think the filmmakers here did a pretty good job of picking and vetting their subjects. Some are more interesting than others. And, you know, it is kind of a risk that you take if you're going to follow 9 students out of, like, a potential, you know, like I said, 1,700. You hope that at least one of them has some kind of arc to, you know, to carry the film along, at, you know, towards the end. And the film kind of has that, but at the same time, there's something kind of nice about the ending, whether your word that is anticlimactic for some of them. And this is if it sounds like I just described a high school version of Spellbound from 2003, you'd be right. It is pretty much that, and it's there's generally not a whole lot of a change in the formula for that. This is the kind of documentary we've seen many times. It's kind of it kind of plays out how you would expect a documentary about a science fair and people competing in it, you know, how it would play out. I've no doubt that, I mean, I haven't seen every episode of documentary now, but I have a feeling this formula has been parodied already, maybe, or will be soon. But that being said, I mean, that is not to say this is a failure or any kind. It's just formulaic, but it's a formula that works, and it works here too. Generally, I can't say I was as emotionally drawn in as I was, you know, when I saw Spellbound. It's not as, you know, the characters aren't quite as quirky; they're a little more serious. Not that they weren't serious in Spellbound, but you know what I mean. They're a little more mature, I guess I would say. But I think the movie gets by on a lot of, on the message of, just hard work and presentation and being able to sell yourself, which is a big part of this thing. It's not just about the work, but it's about how you present yourself. And I think that's how these nine students got by, got to be in this documentary and be the focus of it, because they're very engaging and know how to talk to the camera and know how to present what they have. It's definitely a message that needs to be put out there. It's obviously, we need more scientists and engineers out there, and the message of that is obviously, very potent nowadays, but it's also, just about confidence level and working the room and being your best self in front of important people. And I think that's a good message for teenagers to have. And I think it was a good message for teachers to have as well. So I'm recommending the movie. It's not great. It's formulaic, like I said, but it is good at what it is, what it tries to do, and it achieves most of what it wants to achieve. It's an entertaining film, and it's playing right now at the Siskel Center.
Okay.
And right. We'll be playing at the Wilmette Theater in a couple weeks, I think.
All right, cool. All right, that's a documentary called Science Fair. Okay, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. We've got more to review coming up, but we got a break right now for the news here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is a Monday morning, which means my dad's going to call and tell a joke. Because it's a jokey time. And we are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. And we're going to be talking about movies that make you cry and so much more. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And it is Monday morning, which means it's the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review the movies. Let's welcome Eric back. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, tell us about Private Life.
Okay. This is a film that I talked about from Sundance this year. It was the opening night movie, actually, or one of them. This is a new film from Tamara Jenkins, who did a good film many years ago called The Savages with Laura Linney and Philip Seymour Hoffman. This is the first film that she's written a couple things, but this is the first thing that she's directed since then. And it stars Catherine Hahn and Paul Giamatti as a married couple who have been trying desperately for years to have a child. They have basically exhausted all the possible scientific methods that they can go through. There's a problem with Paul Giamatti's body that's also causing further issues, and it seems like they might be at the end of their rope, but there is possible hope if they can find someone to possibly use someone else's eggs to produce. Thankfully, they have a couple, a couple that are friends, played by John Carroll Lynch and Molly Shannon, that they've been friends with for many years, and they have a college-age daughter in her 20s who's been around them for a good portion of their lives. They know each other very well. It's almost like they're second parents to this child. And at one point, she drops out of college, and instead of wanting to go back home, she decides to stay with Giamatti and Hahn. So they give her a home to stay for a while. And it dawns on them the possibility that maybe she might be the right person to go through with this plan. And she agrees to it. Then it comes the opportunity to tell her parents about the situation. This is a movie that it's kind of a movie in two halves, in a way, because the stuff with Hahn and Giamatti rings really true. The two of them are really fantastic in this movie. It's probably Han's best work to date, and Giamatti is, well, Giamatti. And all the stuff that they go through, all the conversations and everything, when it's just kind of focused on them and the pain that they're going through, and, you know, whether or not that they're even at a point that they even should be going through with this, all of that stuff works on a really beautiful, sad level. The stuff with the daughter, the college-age daughter, I think is a much more problematic. I think the actress playing her is not particularly good. I think that they spend a little too much time on her own private life, including this kind of a potential blossoming romance that kind of gets in the way of things that I don't think is particularly fleshed out very well. And even the sort of the big scene where they have to tell their friends that they're going to use their daughter to do this is really kind of a particularly bad scene. And Molly Shannon is not particularly good when it comes to the hysterical aspects of this film when it tries to kind of, you know, lean into that comedy a little bit. And the movie, you know, it kind of sounds like a comic premise, a really bad comic premise sometimes. There really is a lot of truth in what we see from Han and Giamatti. I mean, the final scene of this movie is really quite devastating. But, you know, it's a film that I can't fully get behind because I think that, I mean, the movie runs over 2 hours long. Unless it's been cut since Sundance, I'm not aware that it has. But it was well over 2 hours long when I saw it. And if it could have been shortened, you could have cut out a lot of the stuff with the daughter. I think you would have had a tighter film. You would have had a more resolute film. But I can't tell people to stay away from it just because the performances of Han and Giamatti are really two of the best performances of the year.
Oh, okay. It's 2 hours and 3 minutes, so I don't know how...
That's about right, yeah.
And it's playing at the Renaissance, but it's also a Netflix film.
Right.
So you can watch it on Netflix. You know, I wasn't really... I remember you talking about this movie, but I wasn't aware that it was on the radar so soon. I had forgotten the title of it, but man, what a cast.
Jeez. Yeah.
I mean, man. All right, it's like they put a bunch of my favorite people in one movie, so...
Yeah, I think you're really going to dig it. I think some of the flaws that I found in it, you might overlook a little bit more of that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Private Life. I'm definitely going to watch it. It's on Netflix. So there you go. All right. Colin?
Yep.
Tell us about Venom.
All right. Well, this is the latest Marvel film, and it focuses on one of their villains. Seen in the Spider-Man movies. I don't know which one it was in. You can tell me if you
the third
know.
One.
Number three.
The third one that the third one that that Raimi directed. The third one.
Okay, got it.
Played by Topher Grace.
yes,
right. That's right. Okay. Well, this one's played by Tom Hardy, so it's a step in the right direction, I guess. And he plays Eddie Brock, who is a video and TV journalist who has a knack for being a thorn in the side of every CEO out there who has something to hide. He's that kind of investigative journalist. And here he's going after Carlton Drake, played by Riz Ahmed, who is the head of a scientific lab that has acquired a blobby specimen from outer space, and Carlton Drake hopes to tame it somehow, and he's testing it on animals and eventually homeless people, you know, crossing a pretty big ethical boundary there. Jenny Slate plays a kind of whistleblower for the lab, and she informs Tom Hardy of what is taking place behind the locked doors, and sneak in one night, and long story short, he comes in contact with the ooze, and it kind of takes over his body and his psyche and turns him into Venom as we know it, a kind of alter ego that he has conversations and disagreements with in every situation, and he basically just kind of morphs, you know, or shapeshifts into this other sort of, you know, menacing dark character. I think one other reviewer compared it to, like, Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin in All of Me, which I think is a fair comparison, just conceptually. And, and Michelle Williams in this as well, and she plays his ex-fiancée. So, you know, this is
a sort of reintroduction to this character who, you know, many people I certainly forgot about him from the past Marvel films. And that's pretty much all this movie is just one big introduction to this character. A movie that doesn't really have anything to say about this character. There's nothing really beyond just, you know, how does, you know, just the origin story part. And then that's kind of like, that's it. Then credits. Now you know who this character is and where he came from, and that's that. But, you know, you can do that and still have a real and interesting film here filled with, you know, real and interesting characters. And when you got people like Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams at the center of it, you better give them there better be some meat on the bone here for them. But there's nothing here. It is kind of just one big, 97-minute void of just, a character who, you know, just exists and for his profession, and then there's not much else to say about him. I mean, Tom Hardy is definitely worth, I mean, you know, it's always good to watch him, and there are some scenes in here where he's clearly having a lot of fun doing this role, and, you know, that's not something, you don't usually see Tom Hardy having fun with a role. It's usually something darker and way more serious, even in something like Mad Max. So, you know, there are some moments here that are fun to watch with Hardy. But, you know, Michelle Williams is wasted, and, you know, of course, Jenny Slate is wasted. Everybody else here is kind of just wasted in this thing. And it's just, you know, when it was over, I just had no interest in seeing this character come back in anything, and I know he's going to. They, of course, have the little cookie at the end that, you know, alludes to the next Venom film that's coming out. But that's the only reason this thing exists, is just to get to the next film. And, you know, I prefer a movie that has, you know, a little bit more going for it than that. So, and also, if you're just going for the action scenes are indecipherable. I couldn't tell when there's one blobby character fighting another blobby character. It is noisy, it is messy, it is incomprehensible. So it doesn't even have that going for it. So big no for Venom for me.
Okay. Guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Eric and Colin are going to hang on. And when we come back from the break, Eric will tell you what he thought of Venom, and I'll tell you what I thought of Venom as well. And that's coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And, it's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're here till 5 a.m. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, we are talking about the movies. It's the Monday morning movie reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. And before the break, Colin told us about Venom, and he didn't like it. And here's Eric. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, what did you think of Venom?
I think Sony's trolling us. I say that because, we talk about all these comic book movies and, you know, so many of them, and many of them which that we do like. But, you know, I think that, you know, we can all agree that sometimes a studio will, you know, could put out anything, slap a Marvel logo on it, and we just show up. And that's what it seems that has happened here with Venom. And you go back, a little over a year ago, when this project was, the standalone spin-off project was first announced, it was right around the time that this movie Life was coming out in theaters, the Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds science fiction movie about this symbiote alien that they find, and you know the danger of it getting back to Earth. And there were all these rumors at the time that this was like some setup for the big Venom movie. It just happened to be announced right around that time. Both were released by Sony, and it's hard not to think of that movie a bit during this, particularly when Riz Ahmed's like, his company is like called Life Industries or something. It's just like really? So now they're just kind of trolling us a little bit. But there are movies, there are projects over time that you know, sometimes there's one character or one book or one story from many years ago, and you know, a lot of movies, you know, that are made many years down the road kind of, you know, take things from that source material and make it their own. You know, John Carter is kind of a perfect example of that. You know, and Venom, you know, which is a character I believe was origin in like the mid 80s in the comics. And you think about this movie, and it's hard to think about, not think about, you know, like The Hidden. And, you know, it just seems like all of their ideas in this movie are taking from better sources, and it's kind of the chicken the egg thing. Did it come from the Venom comics, or did it come from these movies? And they just sort of incorporated Venom into, you know, these homages or whatever they're trying to do. I mean, Venom gets into a dog at one point in this movie, just like in The Hidden. But also, there's a movie from just a couple of months ago that has an actor in it who's not that indistinguishable from Tom Hardy. Called Upgrade.
Yep.
And I just, like, you watch this movie, and, you know, I mean, maybe Lee Winnell, you know, read the tea leaves and got that movie made pretty quickly. And I don't think that's a great movie either, but it's a lot more, you know, at least it seems to be a lot more original, a lot more fun, or at least it's trying to have a lot more fun than this movie. The only one that's trying to have fun in this movie is, Colin is right, is Tom Hardy there, because he's just, you can see on his face, he smells the ridiculousness of this movie, and he just kind of goes along with it. And, you know, but, you know, the Venom character is a villain, and he's, you know, he's been raised as a villain and brought up as a villain. And we, you know, in Spider-Man 3, he's a horrendous villain. And here, you know, they're kind of leading you towards that, you know, the way that Upgrade kind of gets you to. But, you know, and then then all of a sudden, like, for the climax, you know, no, there's a worse Venom out there. And so then Venom becomes the good guy. I'm like, wait a second. What are we watching here? So like in the next movie, you know, when they finally connect him to Spider-Man, we're going to have to root against the characters that we were. I mean, what is this, wrestling? You know, so like all of that stuff is a mess. The stuff leading up to him finally being infected by the symbiote is really boring. Just deadly boring. I hate seeing Michelle Williams wasted like this. Even when she gets a moment to possibly have fun, it is such a throwaway moment thrown in there for serious comic book nerds that everyone else is just going to go like, what is this? And, you know, by the end of it, I was just like, really, they spent all this time and all this money on this thing to do a spinoff, and they couldn't even do anything interesting to do this villain justice. This is a hard pass for me, too.
Yeah, I thought this movie stunk. I thought it was terrible. And I thought Tom Hardy was ridiculous in it. I guess you're right, Eric, to a certain extent. I guess if he thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I may as well just have some fun with it. But it's a weird, it's a very strange performance. I kept thinking about Upgrade the entire time. I'm not kidding. Like, you know, and by the way, it takes like over an hour until Venom shows up. I mean, all that stuff goes on forever before, you know, you actually get the Venom character. Not a particularly interesting idea here, and you're right, it's completely derivative of other better movies. And as you said, Colin, the action sequences are just, they're generic, and they're not well staged, and they're not well edited, and it's just bad CGI after bad CGI, and, you know, really clumsily, you know, choreographed fight scenes, and not very well edited action sequences, and the special effects are just so apparent. They're just, it's just like, okay, that's that. Well, let's add a little bit more distracting CGI with every scene. The characters, you don't care about anything that happens in this movie. Lots of really talented people completely wasted. You're right. I mean, this is, you know, he's supposed to be a villain. And that's what they want to have their cake and eat it too. But this Upgrade thing, like, you know, that you were talking about, Eric, is like, I mean, it's essentially, you know, the guy who looks exactly like Tom Hardy, not wanting to smack people around or break their necks or punch them in the mouth, and that goes on repeatedly in this movie. You know, and I was really disappointed with this one. One, Scott Rosenberg is credited as one of the screenwriters, and I would imagine he came in, maybe did a polish or something, but I think he's a terrific writer. And Ruben Fleischer directed this movie, and he did Zombieland, and he directed several episodes of the Santa Clarita Diet, which is a show that I really love. And I think this guy, you know, has a lot of talent, but this is as generic as it gets in terms of, you know, there's no directorial style at all here at all. He makes no, you know, there's, you know, that wild creative sense of humor that you see in that the Netflix show, and that you especially see in Zombieland, which has a very distinctive style to it, very funny, and you know the action scenes had a nice little twist to them in Zombieland, and this is just absolute by the numbers, if even that. So yeah, no, this is a bad movie. I think a really really bad movie, but it made $80 million over the weekend, and Eric, we'll talk about that. But I couldn't believe the numbers when I saw the box office list. I was like, what, $80 million it made?
Yeah,
and that outperformed what anybody, you know, was thinking, right?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, no, it was higher than what people were expecting for it.
Wow. Yeah. Phew. Well, anyway, three no's from us for Venom. An absolute waste of time and waste of talent. So, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got one more movie to talk about, and it's Bradley Cooper's directorial debut, with starring him and Lady Gaga, and it's yet another version of A Star Is Born, and that's what we're going to talk about right after we take this break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock. And we are reviewing the new movies, which is what we do every Monday morning. We're going to talk about movies that make you cry as well later on. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. 312-981-7200 is our talk and text number. Okay, let's welcome the guys back. And we got one more movie to review. Here is Eric Childress. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin Suter. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric, tell us about A Star Is Born.
Okay, well, this is Bradley Cooper's directorial debut. The title sounds familiar. It's because it is the classic story that has been remade several times over the years, the last being the one in 1976 with Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson. And in this, Cooper also stars as Jackson Maine. I guess you'd define him as a country singer, I guess, rock and roll country singer, who's also got severe alcohol issues, but still, you know, sells out concerts. And after a concert that opens the film, he has his regular driver take him to, you know, a local bar, something out of the way that he can drown himself in, and he ends up in a drag bar where he meets a young woman played by Lady Gaga, who he sees sing on stage and kind of knocks him out. And so they spend the rest of the evening together, he later on he just wants to spend time with her. He recognizes the talent that she has, though she is still very unsure of herself. She lives with her father, played by Andrew Dice Clay, and he begins taking her on the road with him, and paying attention to what she's writing and whatnot, and as this clearly leads to not just her opening up and getting sort of her big break within the industry, but also a love affair begins between the two of them. And, people who know this story very well knows that at some point the balance of fame is going to shift between the two of them. So if you're familiar with the story, you don't really need to know too much more about the plot. But what you do need to know is that this is an incredibly assured debut from Bradley Cooper behind the camera. His performance in the movie is really great as well. But this is someone who you just see is, you know, really believes in the material and is in absolute control over a great portion of it. He's helped along with Lady Gaga, who we've seen singers try to give performances like this over the years, and you know, I mean, we've seen Lady Gaga in like American Horror Story and a couple of Robert Rodriguez films, but she's never had an opportunity to sort of, you know, stretch herself with a role like this, and she's really quite good as well. It helps that Cooper and Gaga, who co-wrote many of the songs together, the songs in the movie are wonderful. I mean, if you're going to buy a film soundtrack, you just make it this one this week, and you know, worry about the other one some other time, because you know, there are songs in this movie that are absolutely beautiful. They're instantly, you know, just a couple lines, you know, that you're going to want to have them on your, you know, your own rotation. And you know, my when I talked about this movie from Toronto, what I said is that, you know, this is a movie divided into two halves. And I think the first half of this movie, the first hour, is really extraordinary. I think that so much of that that first hour works. The chemistry between the two of them. I didn't even mention Sam Elliott as Bradley Cooper's older brother, who has had to manage and sort of weather the storm of his alcoholism and their sort of their personal issues over the years. He's really good as well. The first half, there's just like so much of it works. The writing is really sharp. The interaction between them, you know, silences between them work so well. Then the second half of the movie, I thought, doesn't quite live up to that same shift. Like, I thought that there was a little bit of absence in exactly, you know, I mean, alcoholism aside, exactly why he goes from selling out concerts to all of a sudden being a backup performer on the Grammys. It just, there seems to be something missing in there. And then the cliches that we've seen over time where they try to take the hot brand new singer and throw her into sort of a pop singer type mold and choreography and ridiculous costumes and stuff like that, which is, you know, it's a bad cliche for one, and it's really kind of extra lame in this movie too, because Lady Gaga kind of elevated that type of music to a greater level, as several artists have over the years. But it does, you know, it's not bad. It's just kind of, we've been there before. So it's like the first hour of the movie, I think, is a 4-star movie. I think the second hour of the movie is a 3-star movie. There's nothing that can't, you know, there's no way I'm not going to recommend this movie very highly. I think people who go out to the theaters will be telling their friends about it. They'll be buying the soundtrack, and we're going to see a lot of Oscar nominations come out of this thing come January.
Yeah. Okay. Colin, what'd you think?
Yeah, I think this movie is really terrific as well. I actually do like the second half of the movie as much as the first half. I think it all works, really. I think this is also a really smartly written script, just kind of scene for scene. I mean, yeah, it is a cliche that she becomes this kind of pop star diva, but that doesn't really become much of a point of contention for the Bradley Cooper character. I mean, it does, but the movie doesn't labor that or belabor that too much. And I kind of like that eventually we just kind of accept that that's what she is, and she kind of accepts it too. I especially love all the later Sam Elliott stuff in the film. I think just the idea of him playing the older brother in the first place, I think, is kind of a leap of faith that, you know, Cooper, made with in that casting, and the sort of, you know, the age difference is pretty significant, but the way they explain it actually works. And you know, a lot of famous people have these kind of weird family trees, so it definitely tracks. And Eric's right that the music is terrific, and that definitely helps. And if you really should see this in a theater, as if you could see it in Dolby Atmos, you should, because the sound of the music is just like, you feel like you're at a real concert. I love the relationship between these two. I love Cooper's kind of gravelly voiced performance in this film. He's you know, his voice is pretty unrecognizable in it, and it works for a character like this who has to sing every night. And I just think, yeah, the silences in this movie, the lovely musical quality of, you know, the scenes where there isn't even any music. And I really do think Bradley Cooper's performance is, I mean, this is definitely, I think, his best performance, particularly towards the end of the film. There's a scene that is just absolutely devastating. It's between him and one other person, and he doesn't say much, but it is by far the most moved I've ever been by Bradley Cooper performance. I really like this movie a lot, and I'm glad to see that it's, you know, getting a lot of positive attention from everybody. I don't know if it'll be on my top 10 list either. I think I'm kind of with Eric. I think it might be just sort of 3.5 stars on it, but I will definitely see it again. And I'm looking forward to seeing it again. And also, Lady Gaga, I think, is terrific. So, yeah, Bradley Cooper can sing, Lady Gaga can act, so that's great. So this is a really terrific film.
Okay. Guys, hang on, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, Eric and Colin are going to hang on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of A Star Is Born. Welcome back. How you guys doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we're in the middle of the movie reviews. It's the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter joined me. Before the break, Eric and Colin both gave very positive reviews to Bradley Cooper's first directorial his directorial debut. A Star Is Born. Eric, welcome back.
Please.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
I think this is one of the best movies of the year, and I was not as high on it beforehand, as everybody else seemed to be. I wasn't really looking forward to it. I wasn't particularly impressed by the trailers, and I've never really been a Lady Gaga fan at all. But I think this movie's great. I think it's absolutely great. One of the best versions of this story that's been told. And I think Bradley Cooper is astonishing in it as well as behind the camera. He directed the hell out of this movie. And I mean, this to me is like, and also I didn't know he could sing. I didn't know he could write music. This guy has gone from somebody I thought was a total D-bag in the Hangover movies to, I think, one of the most important artists working in film today, which is amazing. And I think it's a stunning performance. And Lady Gaga is great in this movie. It's a terrific performance. I saw it in the Dolby Theater. And you're absolutely right, Colin. I mean, that sound is magnificent. And the music's terrific. I like all of the songs. I liked all of the songs. All the stuff that Bradley Cooper's character does, like the first song I thought was a jam with the movie that opens the movie. I was like, man, this song is a jam, you know? And I loved all of the stuff. And, you know, I was on board for the whole thing. The second half didn't bother me. He's selling out stadiums, but there's always this feeling that everybody knows. Which is why I bought his downfall in the second half of the movie completely, is because even at the beginning of the movie, people are, you know, like unsure about, you know, like whether this guy is going to continue to have the success that he once had. And it seemed to me like even at the beginning of the movie, despite the fact that the stadiums were packed, there was this cloud over this character that meant that he was just going down the wrong way and everything was going to fall apart for him. So I felt that all the way through. I thought the supporting performances were all great. Sam Elliott is tremendous in this movie, and he's got a couple of great scenes with Cooper. Andrew Dice Clay as her father, I thought was terrific, and I loved all the limo drivers that were just hanging out in the house and trying to figure out how to watch YouTube. I don't know, that stuff cracked me up, and I liked all that. I loved the drag queen characters and her best friend who kind of just, you know, goes around with her. I think Dave Chappelle, I wanted more of Dave Chappelle. And I like the fact, for some reason, he cast a bunch of stand-ups in the movie, because Eddie Griffin shows up at one point in the film. You know, so you got Chappelle, you got Dice, and you got Eddie Griffin in there playing serious roles and doing a great job. I think Chappelle has has some really wonderful scenes in the movie. I've seen the other versions of this, and particularly the 76 version, because it's my mom's favorite, like one of my mom's favorite movies of all time, and I had that soundtrack blasting through my house as I was growing up, and I've seen the movie multiple times. I don't think it's a great movie, but I've seen it multiple times because of my childhood having been exposed to it. And this one's very close to what they did with the Streisand version in 76. I mean, in terms of like the style of where the characters go, although Barbara Streisand doesn't really turn into a pop diva like Lady Gaga does in this. I love that Alec Baldwin shows up as the host of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
When she gets the gig on SNL, I thought that was pretty cool. And his reaction to the kind of music that she's doing, I also think adds to the downfall. There is a tremendously acted and intense scene between the two of them when she's in a bubble bath. He comes in and kind of confronts her on the music that she's doing, that I found that scene devastating. And there's a lot of stuff in this movie. I cried several times during this movie, and it has everything to do with how good Gaga is and how good Bradley Cooper is, especially Bradley Cooper. He's great in this movie, and I really hope he gets an Oscar nomination because he deserves it.
He might be the front runner, Nick.
Oh, I mean, it is a tremendous performance, and, you know, adding to all of the stuff that he did, you know, in the movie, and, you know, having directed it and singing in it and doing the music for it, this is an accomplishment. This is a huge, huge accomplishment for this guy, and a major statement as a filmmaker. Listen, this is a movie that is so beautifully acted, and clearly Cooper understands how to work with actors because he is one. Because there's not like a false note between the characters in the movie, and it feels very, very, very natural. It's paced very in a humanistic way. There's a scene outside of an all night grocery store that is just beautiful, and it's slow, and you can see the relationship start to click, and Greg Grunberg shows up, and it's not even a J.J. Abrams movie. And I loved everything about this movie. I from the soundtrack to the acting to the directing, I think it's absolutely one of the best movies of the year. And it hit me real hard. It did. And I if you've seen this story before, you know where it's going to go and how it's going to end. But I was deeply, deeply, deeply moved by this film. I think it's great, and I think it's one of the best movies of the year. So here's my
prediction.
Yeah.
On this. Mark the tape on this. I think Bradley Cooper is going to join Walt Disney in getting the most nominations ever by a single person in a single Oscar year.
Okay. I wouldn't doubt that, because, I mean, you know, he's also going to get nominations in the music category.
Right.
Picture,
writing, acting, directing, and I think two songs.
Yeah. That would
tie the record for Walt Disney.
That I wouldn't. You know what? I don't doubt that. And I don't doubt it. Let's see. Next week, we got Goosebumps, Haunted Halloween, which is the sequel. We got The Hate U Give, and two movies that I am unbelievably excited about, First Man and Bad Times at the El Royale. Both of those movies are like way high on my list of movies I can't wait to see. So, and Eric, you've seen both of them.
I think you're going to have a good weekend.
It's been too long since Drew Goddard has made a movie. It's great. Cabin in the Woods was the last one he directed, right?
Last one he directed, yeah. He wrote The Martian.
Right, right. And oh, boy, yeah. What a cast. Led by Jeff Bridges. Oh, please.
You're going to have a good weekend.
I can't wait, man. We're seeing it. My parents and I are going to him back-to-back on Saturday. So, very.
You're gonna have a good Saturday,
and we are obviously seeing First Man in IMAX. There's no question about it. So, all right, okay, Colin, we will talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, buddy, hey, take care. There's Colin. Eric, hang on, okay. We have much to discuss in terms of box office, so hold on a second. Eric Childress is with us, and we reviewed all the new movies, including one of the very best of the year, A Star Is Born. We'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we're going to analyze some crazy stuff that happened at the box office over the weekend right after this on 720 WGN. Okay, hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because A Star Is Born made me cry. A lot. We're going to talk about movies that make you cry and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and we're here till 5, and there you go. So Eric Childress is going to hang out with us here and talk about the box office. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, as we mentioned when we were reviewing the terrible movie Venom, that it made $80 million over the weekend. That is so much more than I even expected. I was stunned.
Yeah, I was stunned, frankly, when the first tracking numbers came out for this several weeks ago, and they said we're saving $65 million. I was like, really? Everything I've heard since they released that trailer is that nobody is interested in seeing this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But then $65 million, that's pretty low for a comic book movie these days. It seemed high, because it looks like garbage, but it's low for a comic book movie. Then it ends up doing $80 million, and the way I fashioned my box office piece that I wrote this week at Rotten Tomatoes, I think this is going to be a classic example of half full, half empty thinking when you look at these numbers, because I mean $80 million, that's the highest opening ever in October ever. Gravity was the highest grosser opening weekend before, and that was only $55 million.
Wow.
Okay, so this is a $25 million increase for an October record. So okay, so there you got that. And there have only been two films ever that have opened to $75 million or more and not gone on to make $200 million: 50 Shades of Grey and X-Men Origins Wolverine. I think this could be the third.
Oh, okay.
I have a hunch that the word of mouth is not going to be great or good at all on this movie. There's a lot of stuff coming out over the next couple of weeks, including in 2 weeks you have Halloween, which is going to be a huge...
Yeah.
It's going to take everyone away. Everyone who's not gone from this movie next week is going to be gone in that third week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, I think Sony's going to be looking at whether or not this thing is going to recoup its money. I mean, it was about a $100 million production, they're saying, somewhere between 100 and 120. So it's, if it doesn't save, let's say it barely reaches $200 million here in the U.S., it needs about another $250 internationally to break even. And amongst the 20 Marvel titles since Blade, back in 1998, the 10 worst reviewed Marvel films, which now includes Venom, did not reach $250 million internationally. This one, Venom, did happen to make $125 million this weekend, so it is halfway there. But I'm going to go out and say that I think that this is going to come up short of $200 million, which would be a real kind of slap in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, the word of mouth has got to be terrible because it's a terrible movie.
Yeah, it can't be good.
No,
it can't be good.
No way. And is First Man going to be number one next week, you think?
I guess it depends on how far Venom drops. Is First Man going to, be over in like 30, 35 million possibly, or is it going to be more in like the high 20s? I think it's a bit of a mystery of what First Man is going to do next week. It would not surprise me if A Star Is Born is number one next weekend.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what number two made, $41.2 million, which is a good chunk of change.
Oh yeah,
real good chunk of change. It was packed when we went on Saturday afternoon. It was packed, and everybody loved it. There was applause at the end of the movie. Everybody, my parents thought it was good. My mom loved it. I mean, she loves the story, and but we all three of us were just like really deeply moved by it. We loved it, and I think it's going to continue to do that. I mean, the word of mouth on this thing is through the roof. So,
oh yeah, no, this thing is going to play.
Yeah.
It's going to play all through October. It's going to be the must see. That's why I'm curious about First Man next week. Because all the adults are still going to be seeing this movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I have a hunch that I think it's going to be very interesting three-way race for the top spot next weekend, between those 2 weeks, the two films this week and then First Man next week. I don't think El Royale is going to do great.
Yeah. No, yeah.
It's a little too esoteric.
Yeah,
for mainstream audiences. And you'll know what I mean when you see it.
Right.
I think Star is Born, Star is Born could still outgrows Venom.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I don't know anyone who didn't like it,
right.
People who have seen it either love it or really, really like it and are recommending it. And it is a movie that I'd like to go back and see it again. And I mean, this is a 2-hour and 20-minute movie we're talking about. It's terrific. I mean, it's terrific. And I hope it makes a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number three, Smallfoot. 14.9 million, 42 million, total so far for Smallfoot.
Yeah, it's headed probably somewhere around the 75 million range. It didn't have a bad drop at all this week. I mean, it didn't only drop one spot in the slot.
Yeah.
But, they can't be happy with those numbers.
Right. Number four, Night School, 12.2 million, 46.7 million in 2 weeks. That's low for a Kevin Hart movie, right?
Recently, and Tiffany Haddish too, although she's only got really Girl Strip under her belt. It's a bit low for a Kevin Hart movie right now. It's behind the pace of Think Like a Man 2, which only finished with 65 million. So that seems somewhere between 60 and 65 million seem to be where Night School is headed right now. It had a big 55% drop this week, probably drop even more next week.
Okay. Number five, The House with a Clock in Its Walls, 7.2 million, bringing it up to 55 million. Has that beaten Hostel?
Yes. It has officially beaten Eli Roth's Hostel. So it's the highest grossing film that he has, at least domestically, that he has made to date. It's probably going to finish, right now looking to finish somewhere between 70 and 80 million, which is not bad, but it hasn't really picked up much overseas so far, and that's where it's going to need to make its money back.
Okay. Number six, A Simple Favor, 3.4 million. Its total is now 49 million. That's pretty good, man.
Yeah, no, a $20 million production, didn't have a huge opening, like $16 million, but clearly has just spawned word of mouth. And, it's not, it might not seem like the sexiest numbers in the world, but this is going to be in the plus column for Paul Feig as opposed to Ghostbusters, which was very much in the red.
Right.
But I think, if Lionsgate's smart, I think that they'll mount some kind of campaign for Kendrick and Blake Lively as well.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Number seven is The Nun, 2.6 million, 113 million as the Conjuring universe continues.
Yeah. What is that up to? I got here. $346 million worldwide.
Oh, my God.
For The Nun.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and there is a Conjuring 3 on the way. James Wan apparently is stepping away from it. He's giving it to somebody else. So the Conjuring universe will live on.
Wow. All right. Well, here's a universe that won't. Number eight is Hellfest, 2 million. 8.8 million in 2 weeks for a low-budget horror movie. That's terrible, even.
Yes, that's bad. Yeah, I mean, the budget was only like $5.5 million, I think, something like that. So, it hasn't even doubled its budget yet. That's just a waste.
Yeah, well, it's a terrible movie, too.
Oh, God.
Number nine, Crazy Rich Asians, one of the big success stories of the year. $2 million, $169 million just in America alone.
Yeah, pretty amazing story, this film. One of the highest grossing films of the year. Surprisingly, it still hasn't done huge business overseas yet. I don't know if that's if they're going to expand that any more going forward, but it's only made like 220 some million so far worldwide. So most of the money is in America.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And then number 10 is The Predator with $900,000, 49.
Didn't even make $1 million.
Didn't even make $1 million this week. So.
Yeah. The Predator right now is struggling to beat Predators from 2010.
That's too bad.
Which only made $52 million. This is a real loser for Fox.
That's too bad because it's good. I think it's good. Yeah. So
yeah.
All right. Well, next week, as we mentioned, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, considering how far Venom drops.
Yeah.
How consistent A Star Is Born stays, and how big First Man opens.
Yeah, I think that the numbers, the top three films are going to be somewhere between $25 and $35 million each.
Okay, it'll be interesting to see what's going on.
All
right. Well, we will talk to you next week, Eric.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot.
You got it.
All right. There's Eric Childress, everybody, and that's a box office report and all that cool stuff. We're going to take a break right here on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about movies that make you cry. That's what's coming up right here on WGN. All right, we'll be right back.